TGFBI, the five letters you've been seeing everywhere on Twitter. Justin Mason, the godfather of the TGFBI, which we're going to refer to as the Invitational because it's a little bit of a tongue twister, had it created. And I'm joined today by Colin Weatherwax and Randy Haynes. And if you don't know who they are now, by the end of the show, I'm sure they're going to have a couple of enemies. So you're definitely going to know who they are. Let me break down the rules for the Great Fantasy Baseball Invitational. And then we'll get to the leagues that we're going to hit today. It's a two-part series, so we're going to hit leagues next time, probably on Sunday, which should be out on Monday. So we'll see what we talk about next time. But this time, let me break down the rules real quick. So if you don't know already, each league consists of 15 teams. There will be, I think it's 13 leagues altogether, and each league's playing with the same rules. 28 players on the roster, one catcher, one first baseman, one second baseman, one shortstop, one third baseman, one corner infielder, one middle infielder, five outfielders, two utility, nine pitchers, and five bench players. Now, Fantrax was nice enough to agree to put $1,000 towards the prize pool, which will be divvied up. And we're doing an online slow draft here, regular 5x5 scoring. And pretty much the name of the game here is to not just win your league, but beat everybody, all 195. Whoever comes out on top out of the 195 wins it all. And there's a 1,000-inning pitch minimum requirement. But everything else is pretty much standard. The FAB, you get a supplementary budget of $1,000. And you can make trades during the season. So Randy, Colin, introduce yourself for those who don't know. Give us your Twitter name and anything you're working on before we get into the TGFBI here. Randy?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at RTH222. And just getting ready for the rest of draft season.
And Colin?
Yeah, you can follow me at CWeatherwax13 on Twitter. I have actually 6 slow drafts going on right now, so I'm trying to get my addiction done real quick, but just ready for the season.
I think it's definitely an addiction you got over there, Colin. So today, like I said earlier, we're going to split it up into two shows. So if you're in your league today or you're listening, you're going to want to hear what we have to say. Today we are going over leagues 2, 4, 5, 9, 11, and 13. And not only that, but we have a representative from League 2 that's about to join us right after the break here, Anthony Aniano from Roto Bowlers. So we're going to do the Vertex promo real quick, and when we come back, we'll have Aniano on the show. If you like betting, I have the deal for you. Eli Rosenfeld of Vertex Betting is one of the best in the business, and unlike many betting information sites, he gives away all his info for free. There's no risk, no signups, no money needed to get the best betting insight in the business. Go check out vertexbetting.com and see why it beats all the other sites out there. And if you want to try out betting for the first time, click on the Bet Now link and sign up for MyBookie and or XBet with a $45 deposit. You will get a $50 rebate from Vertex Betting. Just tell Eli from Vertex that FWFB or Justin Mason sent you for a $50 rebate on a $45 deposit. All right, and we're back from the break here. Anthony Aniano, RotoBallers.com. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, not a problem. So listen, we're going to go with League 2 first. Let me just give you the rundown of who's in League 2 for the people out there listening. You got Eric Cross from Fantrax, Mike Werner, Michael Waterloo, Smoke Show, oh, I probably should find out who that is, Chris Towers, Captain Hook, Masters Ball, FrostedTakes.com, Jim Bay from FWFB, Clay Link from RotoWire, Jay Johnson, Bogman, Lou Landers from the Real Sports Crew, Fantasy Judgment, you yourself, RotoBaller Aniano, and Robbins, Ariel Cohen. So you definitely got a tough league here, Anthony, and we just wanted to talk about your strategy coming into it and how it's played out over the course of the draft. So coming into it, what was your strategy regarding the TGFBI?
I was just looking for balance. You know, 15-team league, I had the 14th pick overall. So really, I felt the early part of the draft wasn't in my hands. I sat back and, you know, I didn't mind drafting 14th overall. Let the draft come to me, see what is there, and then adjust on the fly at that point. I have to nail my first two picks. Got to really nail my first six, I figured, and I needed some combination of pitching and offense there. I couldn't miss a run. You know, that was my big concern. If I miss a run and I'm going almost 30 picks, I miss a run, I'm in deep trouble. So I have to start the run. I have to be in the middle of a run. I can't miss a run. And I think I did a good job of that.
And it definitely worked out well for you because you got the fourth pitcher out of the big four, Corey Kluber, who arguably some people have him better than Kershaw or Scherzer or whatever it is. But you got one of the four, so that really solidified your pitching staff. And I know Randy's a big fan of what you did in the draft. Randy, what are your thoughts on Anthony's draft?
Yeah, Anthony, before I knew you were coming on, I actually had you down as who I the roster I liked the most out of this draft. And when you're picking at the 14 spot, I like getting one of those final four, or one of those top four like you did. You got the last one. pairing it with a first-round caliber hitter like a Correa. You got a little fortunate with DeGrom falling in your lap there at the end of the third round. That's great value there, considering where he had been going in a lot of the other drafts that are happening in the Invitational now. The Abreu pick, again, was really good. And then you did a nice job of balancing out throughout the rest of the way. You were able to grab two solid closers with Jobs, mix in some speed and some power throughout the rest of the way. So I really liked your team. I'm a big Taillon fan. You got him in the 12th round, which I really like that pick.
Now, yeah, you know, I'm sorry, Mike. I was just going to say, I had no plans on taking a pitcher in the first round. I'll be honest. That goes against anything. If anybody's ever heard me on any other show, I don't believe in it. But because he was the last of the four bigs left, and there was such a long run, if I didn't go there, it was a long wait. And that's why I pounced on Kluber. Correa, I was shocked he was there. I had a choice of Correa or Machado with my first pick in the second round. Couldn't really go wrong either way. I view shortstop, I don't know, maybe a little bit thinner. Grabbed Correa, and you're right. DeGrom, Abreu, those are what I refer to as back-of-the-baseball-card players. So I was thrilled.
And, of course, you dropped the back-of-the-baseball-card thing because that's your line and that's what you do, Anthony. Colin, we were talking off-air before, and you mentioned the third baseman that Anthony took that you might not be too fond of.
Yeah, so the first thing that popped out to me on your draft, Anthony, was taking Jake Lamb at 107 overall. It tells me that you don't believe in the humidor, as many people do, especially taking him before Joey Gallo, Kyle Seager. His ADP right now is 126. You were pretty close to his minimum pick of 96, so I wanted to get your thoughts on taking Jake Lamb there in the that early.
Listen, Jake Lamb is a flawed player. There's no denying that. He can't hit a lefty. And he occasionally will sit against a tough lefty. But at the end of the season now, it's been a couple of years in a row, 25-plus, 90-plus. I'm not overly concerned about the humidor. Remember, only playing there half the time anyway. He's still going to hit over 20 home runs and drive in 90. Joey Gallo, to me, is a god-awful fantasy baseball player. He is a one-trick pony. I had no interest in a player like him. I've been playing this game for, I don't even know, 15 years. I've never owned Adam Dunn. I'm sure as heck never owning Joey Gallo. What do you have? 40 home runs and about 80 RBIs. That screams poor production. You hit 40 home runs and you better be driving in 120. We know he can't hit anything other than a home run. What's his batting average? Just around 200. I would rather lose a little power with a Jake Lamb and at least get a 250 hitter. Or Todd Frazier, who 31 home runs as my corner infielder, who has hit in the past 240. I'm not carrying a 200 hitter who only drives in 80 runs when he hits 40 home runs. I try to avoid that as much as possible.
Yeah, and I did like the last few picks that you said, Todd Frazier, also like Jaime Candelario as kind of like a backup plan for Jake Lamb, which I thought going in might have been your plan just in case Jake Lamb didn't work out. One other question I had for you, whenever you started off the show, you said you had no intention of taking Kluber there in the first round. If you could have been guaranteed of getting DeGrom in that third round, what way would you have gone in that first round?
I probably would have gone Machado or Correa. I probably would have gone Correa there or Machado there and doubled up on the two big bats if I knew I could get a DeGrom. But hindsight being what it is, I'm glad I did go Kluber because the pitching got thin. You know, I have DeGrom and I have Kluber. I have my aces. And then after that, my starting pitching, there's some question marks, some young kids with upside. Some veterans. Oh, my draft pick is up. That was that what you heard. You know, I'm on the clock. I've got 4 hours, so don't worry. We can finish this. But the truth is, you know, Cole Hamels, Giolito, Steven Matz, there's upside there. There's veterans there. But I got two sure bets. I got DeGrom. I got Kluber. At the very least, I know what I'm getting with them.
And I like some of your picks late in the draft here. You got JT Realmuto. It seems like a good price here. A couple other guys. One guy you picked early, you got Daniel Murphy in the fifth round. And I'm not sure what day it was when you drafted him.
The news broke. It was before the news broke on Murphy. And that's why, if you notice, when I got wind of that, I really had to find myself a second baseman to hedge my bets. I was able to get Starlin Castro in round 17, who I think is underrated. I really do. I know he's in Miami, but all this guy does is hit. You know, he just 200 hits, lock it up. And then I was thrilled very late. I believe it was round, as I'm pulling it up here, guys, round 23, I walked away with Devin Travis of Toronto, that if I have to move Castro to second base, which I probably will, Travis could slide into my middle infield position. And you know what? Devin Travis's issue has never been his ability to hit the ball. Devin Travis's issue is getting on the field. If he stays healthy, he's more than respectable in a 15-team league to be a middle infielder. So I wouldn't carry three second basemen, but the Murphy knee situation felt the need to do it.
Yeah, and while we have you here, let's take a look at the rest of the league, because I know Randy and Colin both have a ton of notes on this draft, because it's been a pretty interesting draft that you've been in so far. Colin, you want to start and just things that stand out to you in League 2 here?
Yeah, sure. So like Randy said, he went with your team as his favorite. I'm not that much of a suck-up, so I went with Mr. Bogman here. So he started his draft with Chris Bryant, Francisco Lindor, and then Cookie Carrasco as his ace. Followed that up with Yu Darvish. So he gets two big bats, two big pitchers to start off his draft. A couple of other picks that I liked was Lorenzo Cain. He did get Mike Moustakas real late, probably around 162, which is right in the middle of his ADP right now. And not knowing where he's going to be, that can be, you know, a lottery pick from especially a 15-team league like this one. And then a few of his sleeper pitchers, Garrett Richards, Archie Bradley. I also like Yonder Alonso a lot as a late-round pick.
Now, Colin, I know you absolutely despise Danny Salazar, which is one of the guys he got here. And I was thinking to myself, there's no way Colin likes his team with Danny Salazar on it. But I don't even want to talk about him. The guy I want to talk about is Archie Bradley and the situation going on in Arizona, because they got the guy from Japan, Hirano, and they got Brad Boxberger, who I think might end up being the closer here. If Archie Bradley's a swingman, or maybe even they try and make him a starter, he's not as valuable as he went in this draft, is he?
He might be. Even if, you know, Hirano or Boxberger take over as the closer, I could see him sliding into an Andrew Miller role, also be a swing guy like Brad Peacock and throw him in the rotation just in case they need it. So his value isn't, you know, too heavy on my mind for them, especially for his team being so balanced. But the way he's looked this spring, it is a little scary, but I hope that he can come out of it and still be the closer, if not an Andrew Miller role.
Yeah, I could see that happening. Randy, what are your notes on League 2 here?
Yeah, I liked Team Bogman. My one issue kind of with them was going into the relief pitcher ideas. Their really only closer is Ken Giles. There's a couple of guys that might be the next guy in line. But if you're going to, in a competition like this with an overall component, you can't punt saves, and that isn't really what he's doing. You know, you can still have some trades. There's still some fab mix in. But for the draft purposes, you know, that we're doing with this exercise, I had to dock him a little bit for that. Our fellow colleague, Mike Warner, I liked his start a lot. You know, you go on Altuve, Bellinger, D. Gordon, Nelson Cruz, Garrett Cole, first five picks. It looks to me like Mike just went best player on the board. You know, ended up with Altuve and Gordon. That's a great mix of speed and power there. You know, maybe some people aren't as comfortable with Garrett Cole as the ace of their staff, but I am. You know you're going to get a durable season there. He's in a better, you know, in a better situation. Wins should be up. Strikeouts should still be there. So I did like what Mike did. As far as a few picks, there was a Will Myers at 80 was a very nice value. I think that ended up being his the lowest that he was picked in the entire Invitational. So that was a nice pick there. I liked Fantasy Judgment's team, outside of the fact that I don't know where his speed is really going to come from, unless you're banking on Brett Gardner staying healthy all season. But other than that, that was a nice squad there. Speed just might end up holding him back. And every team is going to have some weaknesses. I guess if I had to pick one team to really kind of go at, would probably be Eric Cross. You know, his staff is anchored by Otani, Luis Castillo, Marcus Stroman, and none of those guys are guarantees at this point, especially, you know, with Stroman's injuries that he's dealing with this spring. And he didn't really back it up with a lot of innings eaters outside of, like, a Dan Straley, you know, towards the end of his draft. So his pitching could end up being his downfall. But there's a lot to like in this draft. It was very, very well done.
And it's interesting that you bring up Cross, because, like myself, he had the first pick. We both took Trout. And those were the three pitchers he ended up with. And not to toot my own horn here, but I got Noah Syndergaard. What do I got? I got Noah Syndergaard, James Paxton, and one more
on the clock
that I can't. Can't think of right now.
I sent you grabbed Severino, didn't you?
Severino.
Did you grab Severino? Yeah.
Yeah, so Syndergaard, Severino, and Paxton, which I think is way better than what Cross has, but we'll see how that plays out. And while you're here, Anthony, a point that I want to touch on that Randy said about punting saves. I see here that you got Edwin Diaz and Alex Colomé. Was that a plan for you to get two saves guys, two legit guys that you know are going to get their saves?
Yeah, I don't need to win saves, just like I don't need to win stolen bases. Just get me in the middle of the pack, and I think that's what those two closers do. And if you look at my team, very similar in terms of speed. I didn't invest heavy in it, but I got enough speed there where I think I stay in the middle. You know, guys like Cameron Maben. And, you know, I took a flyer just earlier today here as I'm about to make my last pick in a moment. In round 25, you guys mentioned it, Boxberger. Guys, it's not a guarantee that Archie Bradley is going to be the closer. He's not going back to the rotation in Arizona. I've got that from a pretty good source. But the truth of the matter is Arizona is very tempted to keep him in that 7th and 8th inning role where he has excelled last year. And I owned him in leagues. He kept whip down. He gave me some strikeouts. He kept my ERA down. Don't be shocked if he potentially stays in that role or goes back to that role if he struggles. We all know how the game has changed and the bullpen has changed. Boxberger has experience closing. To get him in round 25, if he gives me even 15 saves in that round, it's an absolute steal. I'm thrilled with it. Don't underestimate those middle relievers, the David Robinsons, the Betances, the Boxbergers, the Andrew Millers. They have a ton of value in fantasy, better than some seventh starter who's throwing up four innings and six earned runs. So, yeah, no, but the saves, I needed at least two. I got them. Hopefully I got three.
Yeah, and I like Boxberger a lot, actually. He really, when he came back last year, he was really good. His Ks through nine were through the roof. Anthony, thanks for joining us on our first preview show of the Invitational. Really appreciate it. Best of luck to you. If you want to tell everybody your Twitter name, where they can find you, what you're working on.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at A-N-I-A-N-O Fantasy. That's A-A-N-I-A-N-O Fantasy. You hear my podcasts over on rotoballer.com, Rotoballer Radio, Sirius XM every weekend as well. Mike, guys, great job as always. Anytime you need me, you let me know.
All right, thanks for coming on, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Anthony.
All right, so now we're moving to League 4, and I'm going to read off the names here in League 4. If I pronounce your name wrong, sue me. Andrew Dewhurst from FWFB, Brad Cullman from Baseball HQ, James R. Anderson from RotoWire, Andrew Perpetua, Big Humidor guy over at Fangraphs, Howard Bender, who everybody knows from Fantasy Alarm, Tony Sensata from the Fantasy Sports Radio Network, Matthew Bowe from Razzball, Walter McMichael from Lenny Melnick Fantasy Sports, Andy Germani from Fantasy Assembly, Jeremy Hubbard from Fantasy Front Office, Jeff Zimmerman, Fantrax, Fangraphs, etc., Chris Zoli from RotoBaller, Ryan Halam, FightingChanceFantasy.com, Dave from Now Roto, and Mike Hilbig from So-Called Fantasy Experts. And League 4 is another draft that is actually finished now. I wish my draft was finished, but this one's finished. So let's talk about League 4 a little bit. Colin, what do you got on League 4 here?
So we'll start off with my favorite team so far, and that's Jeff Zimmerman's team. I like the balance that he had with his first four picks. I think it's becoming a trend that I like two pitchers, two hitters, but he started his draft off with Charlie Blackmon. He was picking out the number three hole, so that's a little high for him. But he did go Blackmon, D. Gordon, Jacob DeGrom, and then Chris Archer with his first four picks. So I like having that balance. He gets a lot of speed in those first two picks, and everyone knows there's power late. So after he went with Archer, he grabbed Justin Turner, Buster Posey, and then Daniel Murphy. And his first saves guy was Brad Hand. So like you were saying, Randy, or like Anthony was saying, I mean, you just have to be in the middle of the pack in that saves category. So having that one closer and then filling out the rest of your roster with some guys that might find themselves in some save situations, kind of like Alex Claudio, like he did, who might start the season as a closer, that's the way that I want to go. Another interesting team that I kind of marked was Tony Sincotta's team. He started his draft off with Corey Kluber, then Gary Sanchez, Robbie Ray, Yu Darvish, and Chapman. So his only hitter through five rounds was Gary Sanchez. So you know he has to build up that offense moving from there. And his next pick was Ian Desmond, which I think is a big reach. Everyone's getting him at some kind of a discount based on his poor performance last year. But that is way too high for me to draft him. That's an 81st overall. So he did round it out with a Kyle Seager, who's great for offensive production, going late. Eugenio Suarez, same thing. A few speed guys with Villar and Maben. So those are the first two, you know, full teams that kind of popped out to me.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I put up a tweet the other day. I guess I spoke too soon that I thought I was in the conversation for the best pitching staff in the whole entire thing. And now looking at Tony Cincotta's team, like you mentioned, to have Kluber, Ray, Darvish, Chapman, and then he followed that up with Brandon Morrow, Kelvin Herrera. I mean, this guy's got a ton of good pitchers here, and that's interesting to note. Randy, what do you see in this league?
I actually see with this league as being one of the more interesting ones, considering not only with Tony, but I'm not sure who Scooby Snacks is. I don't have that in front of me, but he also went, you know, with his first five picks, he's got four pitchers and a catcher, which is what Tony did, just in a different order. Now I don't agree with kind of how he got there with going Strasburg and Severino at the, you know, 15-16 turn, when that is a combo that, you know, we've seen going around the turn, you know, at the other end at two going into three, and then following that up with Jansen and Kimbrel. You know, he took a lot of shots late with trying to get some power guys and some speed guys, so it could end up working out for him, but it's just not something that I could ever be willing to do. And it kind of is the same thing with Tony. You know, he took some shots throughout the draft trying to get some high speed guys like a VR and a Maben, and once with some with a low batting average like a Trumbo, Schebler's in there, Kendrys Morales, a little better batting average with Morales. The team that I ended up liking the most was Ryan Hallam. Started off with Sale and Bryant. He has something to do with picking 14th, because in the league we just did, League 2, I liked Anthony the best, and he started at, you know, the 14th pick, went with a, you know, one of those top four starters, came back around with a first round caliber bat like a Chris Bryant, and then he did a really good job of just adding quality players throughout the rest of the way. Ozuna got a pretty good value on Encarnacion, considering Rhys Hoskins went almost 10 picks earlier, which I didn't really care for that too much. Cespedes added a guy like Chris Taylor. He's got some closers in there, so I really liked that team. But this was a pretty interesting draft overall, just starting with Blackman going at three. Our colleague Andrew Dewhurst took Scherzer at six, which I think was the second or third highest pick for him in the whole Invitational. So this was a pretty interesting league.
Yeah, it definitely was an interesting league. And I'm looking at it here, like you said about Scooby Snacks or Scooby Snacks, whatever it is. He took Strasburg, Severino, Jansen, and Kimbrel with his first four picks. And I'm not a huge fan of that either. I don't really see the value there. And he's kept taking pitchers a little bit later because he took Taijuan Walker, Kenta Maeda, and that was his opportunity to get some hitters. So I'm not really too fond of what he did there. But I do love Ryan Hallam's team: Chris Sale, Chris Bryant, Ozuna, Edwin Encarnacion. It goes on. He lost me a little bit with Trevor Story, but at least he'll get the power out of that position. But then he got right back on track with Margot, Arcia, and guys like that. Now I want to ask you, Colin. We saw, I can't remember the team name, that we just went over in League 2 that picked first, that we weren't really too fond of. But here, Andy Germani has the first pick, and he goes Trout, Bellinger, Syndergaard, Myers, Segura, Hosmer, Billy Hamilton, all guys that are really good. What do you think about his team makeup?
Yeah, so the first pick is kind of polarizing this year. I saw your poll go up today, Mike, about, you know, do you want the first pick or do you not want the first pick? And usually, you know, the past few seasons going into the draft, I'm like, please don't give me the first pick. I know Trout is Trout, but, you know, it's so hard to make up a team that's worth with a lot of good hitters and good pitchers, especially in a 15-team league. But this year going in, I still have yet to get the first pick. That might be what I'm chasing in my addiction. But every team that I've seen besides Eric Cross that we just went over, they're putting together a really good team, and you as well, Mike. So picking out of the one hole isn't as bad as it used to be, especially whenever you compare a Mike Trout with a Cody Bellinger and a Thor, and then get Will Myers as your balance. Gene Segura is some speed. He even went with, which I even highlighted beforehand, he went with Zach Britton at pick 360, which is the end of the 24th round. And in this league where you can stash him as a DL candidate and he can come back, and like we've all been saying this whole podcast, you just have to be in the middle of the pack as a closer. So if he comes back in the middle of the year and he gets you those 15-20 saves, that can make your season.
And not only did he get the closer in Zach Britton in the 24th round, he also got Bud Norris in the 26th round. And after the news came out about Gregerson and his oblique injury, Norris might be the guy there. So very good in the back end of the rounds here for Andy Germani. Randy, do you have anything else on League 4 that you want to touch on, or you want to move over to League 5 here?
I guess the only other thing I had for League 4, and I think this is a result of all those pitchers going early and those two teams not essentially not taking any position players for the first five rounds outside of catcher, was Lorenzo Cain and AJ Pollock went back-to-back pick 84 and 85 in the sixth round. That was the max pick also for both players, and it's just kind of the result of two teams when they have an extreme strategy like that. If someone else is just kind of staying the course, letting the draft come to them, you can find some nice values like that, and that's what Andrew did with Lorenzo Cain and Chris did with AJ Pollock in back-to-back picks.
And Ian Desmond went before both those guys, so just take that.
Yeah.
A little bit of a questionable call there for sure. Now let's move over to League 5. Once again, I'll read out the competitors in League 5. And we got a couple of our own here from FWFB and John Fenton and Bradley Newman. You also got Brian Slack from Baseball HQ, Scott Genstad from RotoWire, Mike Gianella, Baseball Prospectus, Joe Pizzapia, who I spoke to last night from Fantasy, and he has the Black Book, Lance Brozdowski from Razzball, Joel Gulo, kind of sounds like Joey Gallo, from Lenny Melnick Sports, Jim Finch, who runs the site at Fantasy Assembly, Todd Williams, Fantasy Front Office Podcast, Van Shipley from Fantrax, Pierre Camus from RotoBaller, Michael Florio from RotoExperts.com, Paul Monty from DynastySportsEmpire.com, and Ryan Morrison from Around the Bases Pod. And Randy, why don't you start us off here on League 5 and tell me what you see.
The couple of the teams that stood out to me, it was GLG20S. I'm not sure who that is. I'd like to give them a proper shout, but I thought they had put the best team together. Started off with Sale and then just loading up on quality bats. Rizzo, Yelich, Cruz, Kane, three straight rounds. Mixing in some saves, you get a guy like a DJ LeMahieu in the ninth round that can allow you to take more chances later with some potential batting average risk in an attempt to try to beef up some of your other categories, which is what he did with Scott Schebler and a Marcus Semien. So I really like what he did start to finish. I wasn't a huge fan of, is it Brazdow?
Yeah, Lance
Brazdow. Yeah. Yeah, I just, you know, there was, again, his top three starters are Otani, Trevor Bauer, and Danny Salazar. Danny Salazar is kind of broken at this point. We've talked about this on the podcast in previous weeks. So good for him if he thinks, he can get there, and he probably, he'll end up getting there, but I can't go into this with Salazar as my three starter. As far as some individual picks, Jose Abreu, this was his high pick at 26, but I actually like that. Usually I don't like getting guys like that as the highest, as the highest pick, but Abreu is somebody that should probably be going in the late second, early third, and because he's not sexy, as Anthony said, he's a back of the baseball kind of player. He gets bumped down, so I liked that pick. Did you have something, Colin?
Yeah, so kind of to piggyback off the team that chose Jose Abreu, that's the Jim Finch team. He went full RP, which was that was the first time I'd seen it in the TGFI, the Invitational. So his first two picks, he started off with the power bats of Abreu and Paul Goldschmidt, and then his next two rounds, he went Jansen, Chapman. He was able to fill out his offense, which is kind of hard doing a full RP, because he went with Daniel Murphy, Gene Segura, Buster Posey, Ryan Braun, Ian Happ. But then his next RPs were Andrew Miller, Archie Bradley, who we've talked about already, David Robertson, Addison Reed, and then Josh Hader. So Josh Hader and Andrew Miller on the same team will get you hopefully to the innings that he needs. But that was one of the ones that stuck out to me as far as going full RP in a team in a league this size. But my favorite team was actually the FFO Goldie Happens team. So he started his draft with Corey Kluber, Francisco Lindor, Robbie Ray, and Rhys Hoskins. So Rhys Hoskins I'm a little down on in his ADP, but especially this year, but taking him, at the turn in the fourth round is pretty good value. He did shore up his closer in Corey Knebel the next round. He picked Travis Shaw right after him, and then my favorite, Zach Godley. So his team with Kluber, Ray, Godley, Ray and Godley being the humidor effect, and then Corey Kluber to lock it down, I really like that pick. And then just to jump back to Ian Desmond, this guy went in the eighth round in this draft. So that I feel a little bit better about him in the eighth round. I feel better, more in the ninth and tenth range, but getting him in the sixth round, like we already touched on, was a reach.
Yeah, you touched with Jim Finch's team, and if it has the potential to work, I just worry if he's going to reach the innings requirement without, you know, kind of ruining those ratios he is, because he's going to have to stream some free agent starters or make a trade at some point. And just with rolling with nine relievers, I don't see how he gets to the 1,000 innings. So there is going to have to be a time where he picks up a two-star pitcher for a week or streams it, you know, with some favorable matchups off the waiver wire. And that could end up kind of offsetting the huge advantage he's probably going to would normally have with his ratio category. So I'm really curious to see how that plays out. I'm not saying it can't, because if he can hit a couple, you know, really good streamers throughout the season, it probably could end up working out really well. But that's going to be interesting to watch.
And I just want to get your opinion on this, Colin, because I know you feel kind of the same way I do. Now, I don't know if this is the only TGFBI league that did this, but Chris Sale was the first starting pitcher off the board. What are your thoughts on this? And let me tell you that it followed up with Kershaw, Kluber, and then Scherzer. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so I've seen it. You know, being as many drafts as I'm in, I've seen it before. You know, I'd feel a lot more comfortable taking Max Scherzer instead of Sale. That's actually my SP1 this year. And then Kershaw, I can definitely make the argument. Sale, I get it. He might have a better win percentage. You know, actually, they're all on great teams. So the big four this year, it's hard to fault either one going, you know, where they're going in the drafts. With Sale going at 8, 9, and then Kershaw a couple picks after, and then the other two at the end, it's hard to fault that.
Yeah, I see the point you're trying to make there. Randy, one thing I wanted to touch on with you here and get your opinion on, Mike Clevinger was taken before Marcus Stroman. What are your thoughts on that?
Really good timing for whoever did it, because considering they probably took Clevinger before the news that he was officially in the rotation. I mean, everybody could kind of see the writing on the wall with Salazar not progressing, and Stroman, even though it looks like he's not out of the woods yet, but at least he's making strides towards starting the season about as healthy as he can be. But I actually, you know, if you would have asked me that question 3 weeks ago, I would have said that's crazy. But at this point, I'm probably going to end up having Clevinger ahead of Stroman in my rankings.
Yeah, see, 3 weeks ago, I still would have done the same thing. And I think me and Mike are on the same boat as that, because Clevinger, you know, going into the season, I was hoping to get him late. Now I'm willing to pay up because I know I'm going to get that rotation spot. Whereas earlier I believed it, but Cleveland could have made a change and, you know, destroyed my fantasy teams because of it. So taking him before Stroman, especially with Stroman's injury risk, yeah, I was definitely on board, and I loved where he went.
Yeah, I agree. I think at this point it's pretty much clear as day to bring in Clevinger before you would take Stroman. Randy, do you have anything else on League 5 here?
I guess the only other thing that I wanted to point out was Carlos Carrasco's low pick was 45 in this round, which is a really, really good value, considering he went after some other starters that I would rather take Carrasco over. So it was a nice pick.
What about you, Colin? Anything?
No. This league, you know, with Jim Finch going full RP and me and Randy differing on the favorite teams that we have in this league, I'm really interested to see how it plays out this year.
Yeah, just like all of them. I mean, there's a ton of different opinions going around here. And one of our guys at FWFB, Smatta, put together this whole Excel spreadsheet. I don't know how he did it, but there's pretty much everything you could possibly need to review a fantasy baseball draft in that spreadsheet. So you could go check that out. Let's transition over to League 9 here. So we did three leagues. Now we're going to do another three. Let me just give you the rundown on League 9 here. Dave Popping from FWFB, one of our guys. Eric Floramonte from Baseball HQ. Tim Haney from RotoWire. Alex Chamberlain, Fangraphs, RotoBaller. Rob Silver, who's an NFBC champion and projected, I believe at this time of the recording, number one overall. Mike Alexander, who's a contributor at Lineup Logic DFS. Troy Clowder from Razzball, Nick Ruse from Lenny Melnick Sports, Peter Krutzer from PattonandCo.com and TotWars.com, Andy Singleton from Fantrax, Chris McBrien from DMF, Kyle Richardson from RotoBaller, Adam Ronis, who everybody knows from Scout Fantasy and SiriusXM, Doug Thorburn from the Baseball Holics Anonymous podcast, and Reese White from Six Man Rotation. Whew, that was a lot. Randy, why don't you start us off here in League 9?
The first thing that popped out to me was I thought Gary Sanchez went way too high. I thought he was kind of going too high on basically every draft, considering it's a one catcher league. But for him to go with the fourth pick in the second round is something I can't get on board with. And that kind of brings me to a side topic that I noticed with a lot of these, with pretty much every league, was even though it makes sense for catcher to get pushed down, it really got pushed down after those first five guys. I'm sure you guys saw that in your league, which kind of made it difficult on guys that were waiting because they didn't know when to pounce on guys that they were looking at, and it did thin out the pool, you know, a little sooner than it would be if it was a two catcher league. You touched on Rob Silver. I actually had him as the team that I liked the most. You start off with something like a Stanton and JD. I'm not a huge fan of taking Stanton that high per se, but when you pair it up with everything else he's done, it's hard to argue with to get all that kind of power right away. You get a Severino and a Paxton to anchor the rotation. You get, you know, Starling Marte to add in some speed. DJ LeMahieu is a batting average guy to try to offset some of the shots that he took later, with guys like Schwarber and Grichik and Duda that could, you know, sink your batting average a little bit. And then he has, you know, guys like John Lester and Luke Weaver that aren't even essential guys on his staff, you know, with taking Severino and Paxton. So I did really like what Rob did. So what did you guys have?
Now, one thing, let me just get your opinion on this real quick. I had Joe Pizzapia on my other podcast last night, and we were speaking about Starling Marte, and he still thinks Starling Marte is elite. He says this guy was one of the best outfielders 2 years ago, was one of the most coveted outfielders in baseball, and now everybody kind of cooled off on him just because he got into the trouble he got in, whatever it was, had a down year. What are your thoughts on Starling Marte, Randy? You think his value is good here in the fourth round?
Yeah, I actually before kind of thought he was going a little too high in drafts before what happened with it last year. So I'm actually really good with where he's at. I haven't been able to grab him anywhere at that price, but I do like where he's going in drafts this year.
Hey, so he did go ahead of Andrew Benintendi. Are you okay with that? Because the Andrew Benintendi went the pick right after him.
Yeah, I don't have my rankings in front of me, but I'm just kind of knowing how I view those players. I'm sure I have Marte a spot or two ahead of Benintendi, so I'm good with Marte's price this year.
And that's the exact comparison we made last night with me and Joe. He took Starling Marte before Christian Yelich and Andrew Benintendi, and I don't know if I would make the same move there. I know there's a lot of helium behind Yelich right now. Colin, what about you? Would you make the same move Joe did out of those three guys?
You know, whenever you get into that point with his first two picks going Stanton, Martinez, I might have gone either Yelich or Benintendi because I know what I'm going to get with those two. Benintendi giving me the 2020. Yelich has the possibility of giving me the 2020 going to a better ballpark. And then Marte is just the question mark of that three groups. So he could do what he did a couple years ago and hit seven home runs and have 32 stolen bases, or he could go back, you know, to being the monster that he was doing 2020. So I'd go with the safety on those two picks.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Now, Rob does have some guys that I really do like. He obviously has James Paxton, who I like, Justin Turner, a couple other guys here that I'm really fond of. And one of them at the back end, I think it's the 19th round here, he might have reached a little bit, but he took Lucas Duda. And I know Lucas Duda isn't the greatest player in baseball, but Lucas Duda playing in Kansas City, hitting in the middle of the lineup, getting almost every day at bats, he should be a good power source, so I kind of like that. What did you see from Rob's team, Colin, and the rest of the league here for league number 9?
Yeah, so Lucas Duda in the 19th round is good value. I don't think I'd feel too comfortable with him being my starting first baseman, which he has. It's funny that we've kind of picked, you know, our favorite team has included Danny Salazar so far, so that's just but the few observations that I've found in this league, and I'm surprised I haven't found it yet doing my research, but I could not pick a favorite team in this league, so a few things that I came across was Paul Goldschmidt going at pick number 4, which I think is his minimum pick. With the humidor and everything, I guess Andy Singleton is a believer that he can still put up the numbers that he has been. And then moving over to Alex Chamberlain's team, the way that he constructed his team, he was able to get the high average guys, and it was the perfect team for him to draft Joey Gallo, which he did. So that was one of the things that kind of stuck out to me, because he had the average guys. He was able to fit in Gallo, which is something that I'm trying to do in all my drafts this year. Going over to Kyle Richardson's team, that was one of the ones that I had a huge question mark on, because he started his draft off with Bryce Harper, and then he went three straight starting pitchers, and that was Mad Bum, Carlos Martinez, and Dallas Keuchel. So not only did he put himself behind on offense, his next two picks were Xander Bogaerts and Ian Kinsler, which I believe are the two minimum picks for those two guys in the fifth and sixth round. So his offense is going to be very risky. I do like the three horses at the top. I'm not a big fan of Keuchel, but I get it. But putting yourself behind the eight ball on offense so much, it's kind of scary to me. And then the last one for me that kind of stuck out was Peter Kreutzer. He went with, you know, the all-risk team, which is with veterans. He picked Jake Arrieta. He picked Marcus Stroman, Alex Cobb, Eduardo Rodriguez, Kyle Hendricks. So that starting staff is very risky. He's going to have to work the waiver wire, work the fab budget, make sure he can get those late-inning guys, you know, to make up for what he lost.
All right, let me read you guys something here. Mike Itchen Table's team here. I'm going to read you a starting pitching. You tell me what you think of it. Max Scherzer, Otani, Luis Castillo, which obviously Castillo everybody loves, Scherzer everybody loves, and Mike Clevinger added to the mix. Now you scroll down, you got Jimmy Nelson, who may or may not come back by the All-Star break. What do you think of that pitching as a whole? You think that's elite pitching, Randy? You got Scherzer, Otani, Castillo, Clevinger, and the last guy I said was Jimmy Nelson.
Yeah, there was a team that we talked about in one of the previous drafts where Otani and Castillo were their two top pitchers, and that was the team that I said that I kind of liked the least out of there, but I'm okay with it in this scenario because you're using a guy like a Scherzer to anchor your staff, and it allows you to take chances on some guys like Otani and Castillo and Clevinger that have huge upside. There's downside to all three for various reasons, but I really like what he was able to put together. And there's a Kenley Jansen in there, Ken Giles, Brandon Morrow, Alex Colome. You know, he rolled the dice on Zach Britton. If Zach Britton comes back in, you know, late May, early June, and he's peak Zach Britton, this might be, and you know, some of those other starters hit, this might be the best staff in the whole Invitational. It has that potential.
Watch your tone there, Randy, because I think I have
Sorry, Mike. The best non-Mike staff.
So, Colin, real quick, I just want to get your thought on this. Aaron Nola was selected by Andy Singleton in the fourth round. I'm going to read you some pitchers that were taken after him. You tell me if you agree or disagree. You got Chris Archer. You got Garrett Cole, James Paxton, Otani. You got a bunch of guys here. Do you think Aaron Nola is better than all these guys here? Quintana as well?
Absolutely. I have Aaron Nola right outside my top 10. I think I have him as SP12. So getting him in the fourth round to be the anchor of your staff, I'm perfectly fine with. I love pairing him with Garrett Cole, who will give me the wins that I need most likely. And them two alone could provide ace stats. So I'm perfectly fine with taking Nola ahead of some of those guys.
And we just got some breaking news here. I haven't confirmed it yet, so my only source is Randy Haynes. But he just wrote in the chat here, Moustakas to Kansas City. So we'll touch on that because I might have to go. Colin, you should go in one of your nine leagues that you're in and go draft him real quick. So
yeah, I just might.
Randy, anything else here on League 9, or you good on that?
No, we pretty much touched on everything I had for League 9.
What about you, Colin?
Yeah, like I said, with this league, I'm going to be really interested to see who comes out of it because, like I said, I could not pick a winner for me. I know that doesn't mean anything to these guys, but I'm really interested to see who comes out of it.
Yeah, for sure. So we got two leagues left. We'll go right into League 11 here. Like I've been doing, I'm going to give you the rundown real quick. Ray Kuhn from FWFB, one of our guys. Brant Chester, Baseball HQ. Jeff Erickson from RotoWire. Alan Harrison from Fangraphs. Daniel Mallon from Fantasy Alarm, Corey Schulte from Baseline Times, Chris Meany, Fantasy Sports Network, Kerry Klug from Roswell.com, Phil Evans, Fantasy Front Office. It just has Tom here, maybe Tom from MySpace, I'm not sure, from FantasySportsAddicts.com, Matt Furtado from Fantasy Sports X, Shelly, I can't even try and pronounce that last name, but it starts with a V, from Prospects 1500, Michael Tomlin from So-Called Fantasy Experts, Seth Trackman from RotoWorld, and Toby Gevin from BatFlipCrazy.com. So, Randy, we'll start with you here. League 11, what do you see?
I had Brant Chester as the team I like the most, starting off with Chris Sale, which that seems to, it just seems to kind of speak to me so far with going through these leagues. I wasn't actually able to do this picking at the back end of the first round. I picked fourth in my league, but it's Sale pairing it up with Avado. That's great value there. with Votto as the sixth pick in the second round. And he just did a good job of balancing things out through the rest of the way with a Yelich, a Myers. Rolled the dice a little bit on Ozzie Albies. Garrett Cole's there to help anchor his staff. He's got a couple of closers mixed in there. So I really like what he did. As far as somebody that I didn't really understand what was happening there was with Bat Flip Crazy, with kind of, you know, just some of the guys that he ended up pushing up the board. There's not a lot of save potential there unless Dominic Leone ends up hitting. But I also don't. This was probably one of the better all around drafts that we're going to touch on today, because I still, you know, I could definitely see Troy's team doing well. If I had to pick somebody, I guess I was just kind of. He's kind of somebody that I didn't really just love some of the picks that he made in general. But this was a really good draft up and down the board. Not a lot of crazy things seemed to happen. It was really well done.
What are your thoughts on that, Colin?
I'll have to disagree on not a lot of crazy things happen, because the first thing that popped out to me was Shelly V taking D. Gordon in the second round, which I believe was pick 22, which is his high pick, pairing him with Carlos Correa. I can't pull the trigger that high on D. Gordon, who might provide me with 10 home runs. He's elite at one skill, which is steals. And his argument, you know, is comparing him to Trey Turner. But Trey Turner has 20 home run pop. He's at the top of a great lineup, which D. Gordon is as well. But he's also moving to a new position. So that's the one thing that popped out to me. Did you have something to add, Randy?
I was just going to say that I kind of disagree with you on D. Gordon there, as he does provide, you know, elite batting average capabilities and hitting at the top of what should be a really good Seattle lineup. He's going to really help boost runs scored, and picking up outfield is going to help in a league like this, you know, where it's 15 team, it's really deep, you know, it's full of sharks. So I drafted D. Gordon myself. It was a few picks later than what Shelley did, but I don't have a problem with what Shelley did here, grabbing D. Gordon there, because then you put yourself in a situation where you really only have to grab another one or two guys that can run throughout the rest of the way, and you've already put yourself in the middle of that steals pack. So I actually like the Gordon pick there.
Yeah, but what Shelley did here in the sixth round was take Robinson Cano, and that kind of put him as a behind as far as outfield goes, even though he did make some nice picks. Let me read you all his outfielders here. And he's got Manny Margot, who, of course, has the helium behind him. Everybody likes him a lot. Adam Eaton coming off the injury. David Dahl, who has questionable playing time. Mark Trumbo, who is Mark Trumbo. Derek Fisher has questionable playing time. So he really sacrificed his outfield when he made that move to take Cano at six. And I know you said you liked the move there, Randy, to take D. Gordon in the second round. But would you have done the same thing and paired him with Cano in the sixth round and put Cano at utility and sacrifice your outfield like that?
Well, we haven't gotten to my team, but I did something kind of similar with Jonathan Scope. I did immediately address my outfield after I did something like that, but I don't have a problem with it, because you're just trying to, in your first five or six picks, for me at least, you're trying to take the best player available, try to build the best group that you can. So I don't have a problem with it, almost regardless of position. I don't think position. You know, whether you already have a second baseman should matter if they felt Cano was the best player on the board there.
Yeah, so that was the questionable pick for me. That's not something that I'm looking to do in my drafts, but a couple teams that I did like was Jeff Erickson, who picked right after Shelley. They started their draft off with Giancarlo Stanton, Manny Machado, Zach Greinke, and then Starling Marte. Now, we haven't touched on Greinke's, you know, velocity, anything going down in velocity yet, but with him as the anchor of the staff, as long as he can figure everything out, I like it a lot. The one thing that he did do was not take another starter until Aaron Sanchez in the 11th round, which is a little scary to me, but he was able to pair Aroldis Chapman in the 6th round, which might be his max pick, along with Cody Allen to shore up the saves, and his offense included Gene Segura, Trevor Story, who is okay at his value there in the 8th round, but he took some risks on Miggy Cabrera, which might definitely pay off. Jason Kipnis, the spring training wonder, and then Victor Robles towards the end of the, you know, 19th round. So I really like his team. And then another one that I liked was Allen at the Fantasy Fix. He got Kershaw starting off his draft, and, you know, I feel okay with taking that you know, sure thing in one of the top four, and then waiting on this next starting pitcher, which he did in the 11th round of Jameson Taillon, who I'm really high on anyways. So that way I can just stack my offense and be above in a lot of the other categories on offense with Rizzo, Ozuna, Nelson Cruz, who just keeps falling down because of his age, Justin Turner, Lorenzo Cain, and then his RPs of Edwin Diaz and Raisel Iglesias. So I really like that one. And then the last one I want to touch on here was Big Baller Baseball. I know we talked about a full RP strategy, but with his team, it might turn into a full RP strategy because his starting pitchers are Kyle Hendricks, Lance McCullers, and then Marcus Stroman are his top three. So for them three, I just don't believe in them being the top horses in my staff. He was able to pair them with Andrew Miller, Chad Green, and then maybe he can fill it out at the rest of the draft. But I don't feel too comfortable going in with my first pitcher being in the 7th round and that being Kyle Hendricks. So those were a few interesting ones that stood out to me. For me, Allen at the Fantasy Fix and then Jeff Erickson, they tied for the top in my opinion.
Now, something I see here that I think is pretty interesting was Chris Meany took Mike Moustakas in the 10th round. At the start of his draft was pretty much insane. He had Corey Kluber, Aaron Judge, Brian Dozier. Then he paired that with Upton, Paxton, Ian Desmond, who we talked about too much today. But he did take Moustakas in the 10th round, and I got to assume that's one of the higher prices for Moustakas, and this will probably pay off for him in Kansas City. Would you have made a risk like that, Randy? Would you have done something like that? Or
No, not. I mean, knowing what we appear to know now, it looks a lot better. But I couldn't have, you know, at the time that this was happening, you're hearing that Moustakas might sit out till June. I don't think that was ever a real possibility. But I do think, you know, he's saying June publicly, maybe privately. He's like, yeah, I could sit out the first couple weeks of April, maybe. Maybe he waits till, you know, maybe it gets even close to the 1st of May. So it worked out for him, it looks like. But I wouldn't have done that at the time, though.
Yeah, with Moustakas, I think with the news that we got today with him possibly going to KC, I don't think that's good for his value at all. I think he did his peak last year, and everyone knows it's not a hitting park. I think the spike in ADP might have been towards him talking to the Yankees, which was all in all the best case scenario for him, going to play with that short porch in right field. So him taking him there, I have him, you know, his ADP is right around there, but I just can't take that risk with Seager still on the board, Kyle Seager, that is, and a couple other guys that Matt Carpenter, if he's still healthy, and Eduardo Nunez, I would have definitely taken over Moustakas.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Let's go over to League 13 now, and we made it here to the final league we're going to cover today. I'll give you the rundown. Darius Austin, one of our guys from FWFB. Dave Reether, another one of our guys from FWFB. Ray Murphy from Baseball HQ, Derek Van Riper, who everybody knows from RotoWire, Al Melkier from FanRag, Rotographs, MLB.com, Nate Miller from Fantasy Alarm, Joe Galina from Fantasy Sports Network, Danny Cross from CreativeSports.com, Daniel Rotter from Fantasy Life Blog, Max Fries from Fantasy Pros, James Gainey, I believe, from FantasySportsAddicts.com, Scott Green from Prospects 1500, Daniel Strafford from FanVice.com, Keith Farnsworth from FanTracks and Fantasy Front Office, and Tanner Bell from SmartFantasyBaseball.com. All right, so the last one we're going to talk about today. Randy, give me your thoughts on League 13 here.
Yeah, I think League 13 is by far one of the more interesting leagues, which is some of the different strategies that we've seen here. Right off the jump, you have Nate Miller from Fantasy Alarm going with Sale, Robbie Ray, and Carrasco with his first three picks. Takes Encarnacion in the 4th, and then backs up with two relievers, taking Kimbrel and Knebel. So that's a pretty good pitching staff, but I don't know how his offense is going to work out. He took a couple of gambles. It looks like, again, he might be somebody else that has potentially got some good news with Moustakas here. There's some speed guys late that he grabbed. So I can see a path where the team itself works out, but it's definitely a bold strategy. There was a few other guys that went really heavy on reliever. DVR, he's very famous for doing that, loading up on relievers. But I didn't really care for his team too much because I don't know where his speed's going to come from. I look up and down his roster, and I kept thinking, oh, I have to be missing somebody that's projected for a lot of steals, and it's just the guy's just not there. I mean, Aaron Hicks or Kevin Pillar might be his top two speed guys, maybe David Dahl, but he's already proven he cannot stay healthy. So there's a lot of things going on in this draft to talk about, but those are the two that stood out the most to me were Nate and Derek.
Yeah, and I think Derek's putting a lot of stock here into David Dahl's health. which obviously isn't really a good thing to do because he can't stay on the field. Colin, what do you got on this?
Yeah, so to piggyback on Nate Miller from the Fantasy Alarm, I did write down that his five of his first six picks were the pitcher. So I'm okay with that, with forming it around a rock like Edwin Encarnacion, especially in the fourth round. I think that's pretty good value. He was able to fill out his staff with his lineup with Enciarte, Matt Olson, like you said, Moustakas, and then he added Wade Davis as another reliever. So I think it's definitely different than what I've seen so far. So it might work out for him just being the alternative strategy. What you got, Mike?
And I'm just going off the top of my head here, and I don't know if this is a fact or not, but he took AJ Minter here in, I'm not sure what round it was, later in the draft. I don't know if you guys, somewhere in the 20s, but I would assume not. AJ Minter didn't go in too many drafts this year. What do you think about that, Colin?
I've actually seen him on a lot of these draft boards. I was hoping I wouldn't because I love AJ Minter this year. I'm not a big Aroldis Vizcaino guy, so I've seen his stuff. His stuff is going to play. I think the Braves have shown with bringing Kimbrel up that they know how to use the relievers. They had the three lefties a couple years ago that just were dominant. So I love the AJ Minter pick. I think he's a sleeper for closers this year.
Yeah, and Nate's team is definitely a good team. He definitely went after the categories as far as the hitter goes, drafting guys like Olson for home runs, Moustakas for home runs, and then getting guys like Malik Smith for stolen bases. So he definitely was attacking the categories in the right way here. What else do you got in the league here, Colin?
Yeah, so the two teams that I liked, the one I liked the most was at Free Stats. That was my favorite team. He picked out of the number two hole, which I actually did in my league, and he was able to form his team with Altuve, Bellinger, Thor, and then Anthony Rendon. So those first three hitters I love. I love Rendon at his price. And then he backed that up with Tommy Pham the next round at David Price. So that pitching staff has a lot of ability, especially if Price rebounds the way that we think he will. And then getting Roberto Ozuna in the seventh round, I think that's his max pick at pick number 64. And then, of course, he took Joey Gallo. So you know I got to love this team. So did you have anything on the Free Stats team, Randy?
No, not on them. I had just a couple other guys that I wanted to point out. Dan Strafford, I liked his team up until the point he took Greg Bird in the 11th round. Anytime anybody takes Greg Bird in any round, it makes me cringe. But up until that, he was doing a pretty good job. And something that I noticed, just kind of an interesting tidbit, was both of the fantasy front office guys that are in this draft, Keith Farnsworth and at Cubby Knoll, they both essentially punted saves from everything that I'm looking at, other than a couple flyers late on guys like Bearclaw and Dominic Leone. So nothing there just to talk about, but I just thought it was something that was interesting. Two guys from the same site adopting the same strategy.
Yeah, and then to piggyback on the Cubby Knoll team, I'm actually in a dynasty league with Fantasy Keith and then at Cubby Knoll, but I really liked how Cubby Knoll's team played out in this league. He went Goldschmidt as his first round pick. I believe it was eighth or ninth overall. And then he paired that with Francisco Lindor, Alex Bregman, and then Aaron Nola. So I think, you know, after we've reviewed so many of these drafts, we've kind of made ourselves, you know, like some teams with just some different pitchers, just some different players that we like. So Aaron Nola as an ace of the staff, I'm perfectly fine with. I don't know if you guys are, but just seeing him as an ace of the staff, I think that might, you know, shy some people off. But he did go Clevinger late, which I know you like, Mike. I love Scott Kingery in the 18th round. I think he's going to be a dominant second baseman this year, and we're getting him at a discount. So I do think at Free Stats was the best team, but I definitely like James's team as well.
Some very interesting points there. All right, we're going to wrap this up. So if you're in League 2, 4, 5, 9, 11, or 13, you should definitely check out this podcast. I'll put it out on Twitter. We'll all put it out on Twitter. I don't think anybody's going this in-depth as far as the TGFBI goes. If you guys want to track everybody's drafts, all 13 drafts or whatever it is, you can follow along at Smata_BB, and he has live projections and live ADPs pretty much from every single player and every single draft, by every single pick, by every single manager. So he's doing some crazy stuff with that. It's like a big spreadsheet that you could check out. Colin, before we go, anything you want to say? You want to give the listeners your Twitter again, just in case they have any beef with you talking bad about their picks?
Yeah, come at me, bro. I'm at CWeatherwax13. I'd love to hear what y'all think about our podcast this week. You know, we kind of went after some guys, like some picks, dislike some picks. So, yeah, come at me at CWeatherwax13.
What about you, Randy?
Yeah, I'm at RTH222 on Twitter. Yeah, if you want to, you know, if I spoke down about your team, you know, come at me. I'm not trying to put anybody down. This is 195 of the best guys that are doing this. I'm honored to be involved with it, and it's great. Everybody in here is doing their thing and doing well, but gotta make some opinions here. So,
and thanks to Anthony Aniano from RotoBoilers.com for joining us today. Wish him luck in League 2. Listen, I'm your host at Mike the RotoCop. Follow me just like the other guys. If you have anything that you want to say, questions about the TGFBI, whatever it is, you can at me there, Mike the RotoCop. And for Friends of Fantasy Benefits, signing off. Thanks for listening.